All right, everybody, welcome back to Horror Bros. I'm your host, Jason Johnson, along with
JT Johnson.
What's up, my brother?
Man, nothing much. I've been watching Bond movies. A little spoiler alert for something maybe coming in the future.
Yeah.
Working on formatting, working on how we're going to do it. But we may be visiting. We may be taking a slight deviation from horror for a minute. But that's a ways down the road. Beyond that, I've actually been taking a pretty big break from horror. I always do that when Halloween rolls around. I overload on horror films all the way up to Halloween, and then like I have to take a moment to breathe.
Yeah.
And not watch as much horror. So I haven't watched much. I'll tell you this one, though. I just watched a movie the first time. It's mostly a Western, but it has horror tropes. I don't know if I discussed it on the last episode, because it's been a minute since we recorded. Called Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah.
With Patrick Wilson and Kurt Russell. Man, if you have not watched that movie, watch that movie.
Yeah.
It is fucking awesome. It's a 2015 film. It's become a cult hit. I loved it. Beyond that, I've been playing the remake of Dead Space, which was a game I loved from 2008.
Right.
That EA remade, and they done a real good job with it. And I'm, you may hear me shuffling some things around here. And it's a good remake. It's got that same right mixture of an alien-esque atmosphere, action, and then of course plenty of jump scares. I totally recommend it. The only other update I've got for now is I'm about to start reviewing movies on a more regular basis, meaning on Sunday mornings I'm going to go watch a movie and review it. I'm going to be posting all new reviews, even if they're horror. If it's a new review, I'm going to be posting those on my main blog, thegeeklyblog.blogspot.com. It's like the weekly blog, but with a G instead of a W. I will still be using horrorbros.blogspot.com for reviews of older horror films or horror-related articles. So that will still be active. Right. I haven't been doing anything here recently due to the holidays, whatever. But that'll be that's the update on that. In the meantime, I don't have any new reviews this Sunday. I'm going to go watch Godzilla Minus One, which I've heard nothing but good things about.
Right.
And I had a friend of mine who is like a major kaiju fan. Like he loves monster movies. And he said, dude, this movie's brutal. Don't take your kids to it.
Yeah.
Like this movie is brutal, but it's fucking fantastic. He said the sound design is fucking pitch perfect. That Godzilla roar, man, you just can't get over it.
Yeah.
And as far as news is concerned, a little bit of bad news. They're going to have to fucking do a fucking miracle to make me go watch Scream 7 at this point.
Yeah. It's
Spyglass really fucked up. I don't care if like Jenna Ortega's schedule with Wednesday keeps her from coming back.
Yeah.
But with the way they handled Michelle Barrera, who said nothing controversial.
Yeah, nothing.
She said nothing. She spoke out against genocide. Oh, how dare she?
Yeah.
She basically said, hey, maybe some shit on both sides. She wasn't, you know, discrediting Hamas, but she or justifying them. She just said, hey, not everything Israel's doing is good.
Yeah.
In this war. And there was no reason to fire her. And the backlash is actually going back as far as Thanksgiving, the movie Thanksgiving, because Spyglass did that movie.
Yeah,
there's actually, I saw reports where they were wanting to boycott Thanksgiving. And no, don't boycott that movie. That movie's already been made by several hardworking artists, and it's a really good movie. Now, boycott Scream 7 all you want.
Yeah.
Like, that's the appropriate course of action here. But I saw a headline like the next day that said, on Spyglass's wish list, Neve Campbell and Patrick Dempsey. Yeah, back up the dump truck full of money that you will need to get Neve Campbell to come back, because that was your problem with 6. So, we'll see what happens from here. Maybe they'll come out and say, you know, well, we apologize. Maybe we misstepped or whatever, but don't fire someone just because they said something on fucking Twitter
Plus,
like, well, that's what's pissing me off.
Yeah, and the thing is it's, you know, this is one of the most complicated things that's ever happened in human history as far as what lies behind it, you know? And basically all she was saying was, hey, learn about everything that's going on over there before you start screaming about it, you know, which side you're on or whatever, because these sides are not easily picked in this one. In fact, you probably shouldn't be picking a side at all. You should probably be picking the side of humanity, the people of Israel and the people of Palestine. That's what's important here, you know, and a lot of people have been done wrong on both sides now. Which is a big problem with these people that have said wrong things. You can tell it's very much people who have done no research, have not really looked into what they're talking about, and are just spouting off at the damn mouth, you know. And so,
well, one of my friends that I've made at my job over the past few years, he's a customer of the place where I work. He's a Muslim, and he's from Palestine, and he said, I've been living with this my whole life. In the 80s, this was happening. In the 90s, this was happening. We'd have these periods of peace, and then this would happen. And then he said something very clarifying. He said, Al Jazeera will give you one side. Fox News and America will give you the Israel side. And he said, in his opinion, he said, it's all just dumbass killing for nothing. And he said, but he said, get both sides. And I felt bad for him because his mother, who had moved over here, moved back over there a day before all this shit started.
Jesus.
And she's trapped over there now. He's claimed that, like, she's in a safe part of the Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
But that's fucking relative at this point.
Right.
It's all dependent on just where they decide to strike at any given moment. Either side.
So
I feel for them, but going back to the news of the day, which was Michelle Barrera, there was no reason she had to be fired from the movie. She said nothing. And the thing is, they're trying to pull an anti-Semitic spin on it. And it's like, she said nothing anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
Like, I've read the comments. I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, so, this is one of
those
subjects.
The news was
better. Yeah. This is one of those subjects that, like, you know, it is so deep. And if you're the funny part is, it seems like the people that are well learned about the whole thing, about both sides of this and what's been going on, seem to be the people suffering the most because, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about the actual conflict people. I'm talking, you know, of course. But as far as people who have spoken out, they're the ones that are saying, hey, this is very complicated. We need to take a huge look at this to see if we can figure it out from from multiple different angles. Because those are the ones that are being, you know, persecuted for it. It's like, no, you know, they didn't say anything wrong. It is. This is a multifaceted problem that is going to take. That's the problem. I don't think anybody knows what it's going to take.
It's been going on since before our lifetimes, and will probably go on way beyond our lifetimes. Let's face facts. We're talking about religious implications here in centuries of bullshit there. Yeah. But anyway, I will turn things to a more positive light because I don't think since the last episode I got to talk about the fact that I did see Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving's fucking fun. It's gory as shit.
It looked like it was going to be a fun movie. Yeah.
But not as bad as like Eli Roth can get. You know what I mean? In the gore category. And when the gore does happen, it's just that right amount of over the top that you can't take it too seriously, but it's also not corny. At the center of it is a Scream mystery. And I guarantee you, if you've watched one or two Scream movies before, you'll figure this movie out in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and say that right now. I'm not going to obviously spoil anything, but The cast is great. Patrick Dempsey, who I just mentioned, they're considering to bring back for Scream. He does a fantastic job. The movie is a lot of fun, and I give it 5 out of 5 turkeys.
There you go.
Because it was a Thanksgiving movie. But I say see that movie. So there's my positive spin on the news.
Well, I don't have much news. The only thing that I do have that I will say, and I stand by this wholeheartedly because it is just so good, is I went and saw The Holdovers. And, man, you want to talk about a great film. This movie is so good. It's set in the 70s. It's set in basically it's a school where there's it's a boys boarding school in the summertime there. They're going to make, you know, men out of you before we send your rich asses to college, you know, type of place, you know. Paul Giamatti kills it as this professor that has to stay over on the holidays because this one kid, his parents can't come get him. And the cast is amazing. Every one of them does a great job. And, I can't say enough good about it. If it's still in theaters in your area, which it probably isn't because it's a, you know, limited thing. It's not a huge IP, so it's not going to get a long-ass run in a theater. But if it's still available, go see it. If it's not still available, as soon as it hits a streaming platform, watch it. It's so good.
I did notice that, like, when I went to go pick up tickets at my Cinemark for Godzilla, that it was still there and it was still playing.
Yeah.
If I have time Sunday, I may try to go watch it if it's still there.
Yeah.
Because it is a movie I wanted to see, but at the time I didn't know if we were even going to get it here.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it's kind of been a limited release. I've been wanting to watch it. Speaking of Godzilla, I did have one more thing. I've watched only the first episode, but I've watched the first episode of Monarch on Apple TV Plus, which is, of course, the latest chapter in the legendary pictures, Monsterverse. And man, did Apple pay some money for that show? Because, I mean, they show Godzilla in one shot, and I'm like, holy shit, this looks good. And whoever decided to cast Wyatt Russell and Kurt Russell as the same role in two different time periods, even though I didn't meet Kurt Russell in this first episode, give them a fucking raise, man.
But
you do meet Wyatt Russell's character in the first, in this first episode. And he kind of like, he doesn't try to sound like his dad.
Yeah.
But he picks up on those mannerisms, that kind of smirk that Kurt Russell can get, that kind of smugness that Kurt Russell's pretty good at giving off when he needs to for a role.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, you can't deny your daddy.
yeah.
But it's good. And there's 3 episodes out now. It looks like there's going to be 10 episodes. They premiere every Friday. So far, based on the first episode, I'm recommending it. So we're going to try to catch up before the 5th episode, at least before next Friday. So I do recommend that. I forgot I have watched that. So
yeah. And with that, you want to go ahead on and get started with this and talk about your movie that we're...
Yes, my movie is 1988's The Blob. It is, of course, based on the 1958 film The Blob by Theodore Simonson and Kay Lineker.
Right.
The writers of this movie you will recognize. The co-writers is also the director, Chuck Russell. And the other co-writer is a Mr. Frank Darabont.
No shit.
Yes. Cinematography is by Mark Irwin. Music by Michael Hoeing. I bring them up because this movie looks good, sounds good. The cast includes Kevin Dillon as the Rebel Brian, Shawnee Smith of Saw fame as the cheerleader Meg, Donovan Leitch as the as Paul, Jeffrey DeMoon, who would become a regular Frank Darabont. He plays I forget his character's name, but he's in The Walking Dead, he's in The Shawshank Redemption, he's in Green Mile. Remember the Green Mile? He's the one that gets pissed on by Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
And so he brings in the hose and goes, "Piss on me." It's one of my favorite scenes in the Green Mile. I just had to mention it. He's in this movie as Sheriff Herb, Paul McCrane as Deputy Bill. Paul McCrane, you may not recognize the name, but you'll definitely recognize him from RoboCop. He's the one that gets right. the acid spilled all over him.
Yeah.
And he's in ER. He's an asshole in that show. Candy Clark is Fran, a waitress. Joe Seneca makes an appearance as Dr. Meadows, the guy who comes in with his team of scientists to investigate the mysterious blob. Bill Moseley of House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects fame, Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, he pops up as Soldier in the Sewer. That is his credit.
Yeah.
It's one of his earliest credits. And then, of course, Del Close as Reverend Meeker. Now, Del Close is a name, again, you might not recognize, but he was actually in Beware of the Blob, which was a sequel to the original Blob in the 70s.
Yeah.
But comedians of the 80s, 70s and 80s should definitely recognize him. He was a major teacher at Second City.
Right.
And I'm talking Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, John Candy, Bob Odenkirk,
Tina Fey. He came up with the rules for modern day improvisational theater. And there's an excellent documentary about him out there. I can't remember what it's on, but yeah, there's it's fantastic. I watched it here probably about a month or two ago.
I was hoping there was, because when I saw his credentials, I was just like, my God, I want to see this dude's life fucking story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just because he's like one of those background people
yeah.
that, you know, that influenced so much. Kind of like Alan Ladd Jr. proving Star Wars, you know.
Yeah.
He's that kind of a figure. You don't recognize the name, but he had so much of an influence on your life.
Yeah.
Especially if you were a fan of film. But the synopsis for this film, pretty simple. After what appears to be a meteor crashes down to Earth near a small town, a gelatinous blob soon terrorizes the town's citizens. Two teenagers, the rebellious Brian Flagg, which was previously mentioned, that's Kevin Dillon, and cheerleader Meg, must figure out how to warn the town about this new threat and deal with the introduction of soldiers and scientists who may know more about the blob than they initially let on.
Yes.
The way this movie came about was Chuck Russell wrote a script for it and submitted it to New Line Cinema. Robert Shea, the guy, of course, who founded New Line Cinema, he turned it down. But he said, hey, how about you and Frank Darabont work on this other film? Why don't you guys make the next Nightmare on Elm Street? And so in 1987, yeah. they make A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Yeah.
Becomes a massive fucking hit,
right.
as we all know. And so after Nightmare 3 becomes a hit, New Line says, make the movie. There is a twist to this movie. It speaks more to the cynicism of the 80s. We initially think it is a meteor at the beginning of the movie. It's even shown to look like a meteor when it cracks out of whatever it's in. But there's a twist to this movie where when the scientists come in, they reveal that it's actually a failed satellite and that it's part of our testing of biological weapons.
Oh.
And it reflected the more cynical age we were living through in the 80s, though we could say that cynicism has not really gone away and maybe it has even gone worse than ever these days. So it
yes.
makes this movie still pretty relevant. Chuck Russell's favorite scene is a famous dishwasher, or is the famous scene where a dishwasher gets sucked into the sink by the blob
yeah.
and eaten. Because when the blob grabs you, it's like it's acidic. It starts to dissolve.
Right.
So, but that is a good example of why this movie for me stands up there with The Thing. The kills are very graphic. They're there. But they come off as like The Thing. They're over the top. They're gooey. They're gory.
Yeah.
You know. But there's a sense of humor in the movie as well. And Shawnee Smith is great as Meg. They even throw in a little bit of a psycho twist where there's one guy you think's going to be the main character, but then the blob gets him like 10 minutes in, and it's like, oh, he'd be dead in 10. Shit.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
is this movie kind of going? The the designer, I want to point him out because he did a really good job, is a guy named Tony Gardner. He's the guy who designed The Blob. He would also work on films such as Zombieland, The Addams Family, There's Something About Mary, and Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa. He designed all the old makeup that Johnny Knoxville had to work.
Oh, cool.
So he's got quite a pedigree on his list. Surprisingly, though, the movie was not a box office success. It had only a $10 million budget, but it couldn't recoup that.
I remember that. I was telling you earlier, I didn't get to rewatch this film. I have been so busy with college and whatnot that I didn't get to sit down and watch it. But I do remember that it was a failure at the box office. And I do remember sitting down and watching it at some point. I rented it and brought it home just because it was there. I remember that it didn't like catch any buzz. Like there wasn't, none of my friends were like running around going, dude, you got to go see The Blob. You know, it just didn't catch. And
well, that's actually part of what Russell says in an interview with him that I watched. Chuck Russell said that like the problem was everything was going fine, but midway through production, there was kind of a changing of the guard at New Line Cinema.
Mm.
And that tends to happen in Hollywood. And therefore, when someone new comes in, what you're making is suddenly not their interest. And so they're not going to market your movie as well. They're not going to really push it. And they really didn't. And in fact, I mean, there's two trailers I watched that were included on my Blu-ray of the movie that I watched for this review here. And they're very basic trailers, man. If I had seen those trailers in the 80s, I wouldn't have given two shits about The Blob.
Right.
I just would have been like, all right, well, that's happening. Yeah. And it didn't help that it did come out in 88, which that's not the end of the slasher, but or the horror genre in the 80s, but we're getting close. And so people are already kind of starting to drift away from the horror genre. And so you really have to hook them.
Right.
To get them in. Although next week's film that I picked is also from 88, and it did hook people, but we'll get to that later.
Okay.
But no, I watched this film seriously, and if anyone's wondering, like, am I watching it with a nostalgic guy, I'm not. I watched this movie for the first time. A still book came out literally a month ago, and I bought the still book just on a lark because it looked so good from Shout Factory that I was just like, I'll give it a shot. It's from the 80s. The chances of me not liking it, to be honest, were going to be pretty remote. And sure enough, I loved it more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it kind of shocked me how much I liked it. I was like, holy shit. For me, this is up there with films like The Thing and just other monster movies. It really works. And I just kind of, I'm glad it's gotten its cult following, but it's like a lot of John Carpenter films. I wish it had been a hit at the time of its release. But
I think two very underrated actors, in my opinion, the Dillon brothers. They got overshadowed by some of the bigger names that came out of the 80s, out of the young people that were acting at that time, and they didn't shine near as bright as them. But my God, those two brothers, Kevin and
real Matt, quick. You know, real quick, 1958's The Blob.
Yeah.
Major star, first leading role, Steve McQueen, proving even legends got forged in the horror fire.
The horror fire, yeah.
I tell you.
The funny part about this is it brought me back when we were doing The Blob earlier, you know, and you told me you were doing the remake of The Blob. I was like, oh, yeah, and I was sitting there thinking, I have had an idea for the longest time that I would love a studio to take up. Then this would be a perfect movie to start it with. And that is making, instead of, you know, like this movie did where they're commenting on the cynicism of the 80s and all, make Mars Attacks style parodies of these old movies. Make remakes of these movies, but have that tone to it, that comedic tone. I think that would be a hilarious season and kind of reboot of those movies and a chance to kind of make fun of those because they are so cheesy. You know, those 50s horror movies where they were just everything became a monster of some sort and they were all so dramatic. You know, JT, I don't know. Basically, William Shatner watched those movies as a teaching device for how to act in a movie, you know?
You can put some political commentary in there. I don't know what you could parody. Maybe, you know, I'm the blob. I'm the biggest blob there's ever been.
Yeah.
I'm the best blob. But the problem is that may be too close to real life.
Yeah.
This movie, it really stunned me. I think the kills are great. I think the characters are fun. I care about these characters, which is great. And you see that early Frank Darabont, man, he knows how to write. That
right.
I when I watched this movie, I thought that kid's got a future.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. So,
I think we're ready to rate this bad boy.
I think we are too. I will say this before we go on to rating that, take the time, folks, if you're looking at movies from back in the 80s and stuff, and you're like, huh, that bombed. I remember that bombed. Take the time to maybe go back and watch some of those films because they're good films. They just had circumstances around them at the time that, you know.
That's how great movies such as Halloween 3 get rediscovered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Halloween
100%.
3 does not get rediscovered unless a certain part of the fan base goes, no. Rewatch this from a different angle.
Yeah. Just wait. There it is.
Just accept the fact that Michael Myers isn't in it and trust me.
Yeah.
But that's a great thing about home video that emerged in the 80s was that a lot of films started to find their something happened where films were finding their audience on video and not necessarily at the theaters. I mean, that's how John Carpenter's The Thing finds an audience. Hell, fast forward to the 90s, we'll go out of the horror genre. We'll go to another Frank Darabont film. That's how a lot of people discover The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
A
lot of people don't remember that was not a huge success initially.
No.
Yeah.
1994 was the year of Forrest fucking Gump, people.
Yeah.
Which I still love. A lot of people are now going back to that film going, oh, it's too sentimental. No, it's the perfect amount of sentimental.
It's perfect in every way. It's my favorite film, and it can kiss my ass, anyone who wants to say all that shit about it.
Because some things in the past weren't that bad.
Yeah.
It's okay to go ahead and look at some things and go, you know what? That part wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
This other shit was bad, but not that.
Yeah. it's funny because that's a movie that is all about that, how all this horrific shit is going on around that this one person, but because of his innocence and his just hyper-focus because of his disability, he focuses on the ones he loves the whole time. And what's right there in his face, which I think is a lesson we could all take, is maybe we should stop paying so much attention to the world and stop paying attention to what's right in front of us.
And if you want to look at the past with a hypercritical eye, just remember that 20 to 30 years from now, someone's going to look at your time the same fucking way.
Exactly.
Not everything is perfect and rose-colored now.
Right.
We're always on the march of progress. We're always improving. But anyway, that's beyond our point here.
Yes, but let's go ahead on and rate The Blob from 1988.
I give The Blob 5 out of 5 exploding phone booths.
Yes.
And if you've seen the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yes, that's one of the few things I remember in this film. I give the movie 10 out of 10 theater marquees, which always feature prominently in the not only the original movie, but somehow the remakes of these 50s movies.
Well, if I'm remembering
correctly, they love showing theater marquees.
If I'm remembering correctly, the Blob's the original Blob in 58. I think the climax was at
the theater. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why in this movie they feature a theater marquee pretty prominently in one scene. It's like, hey, remember that? You know, it's kind of a nod back to that movie.
It's a callback for sure. All right. So that was 1988's The Blob. So many weeks ago when we were still chugging along smooth. By the way, folks, we took a break for the holidays. I mean, we had horrored out, throughout the Halloween season. And then, we took a couple of weeks of break, get through some Thanksgiving stuff and whatnot like that. And so now we're back. But just before that, we took our break, I had chosen the movie Trick or Treat. Which is from what year was that? 2000 and I know it was there. It is 2007.
But there's a caveat to that year. But
yes,
I'll get to it.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. I just found this movie this Halloween season. I had never sat down and watched it, and I wanted to kick myself in the face. Because I can't believe I've never watched this. It's so good. Now, when I did come out, I was living overseas. And so we didn't get it over there. There was no buzz around it or anything at all. So. The movie stars Anna Paquin, who is amazing. And I love Anna Paquin. Anyway, you'll remember her from True Blood fame. And then there's Brian Cox, of course, who you won't recognize, but he kills it, as he does with everything. Because apparently these days, if you take anything to Brian Cox, he'll do it. If you need voiceover work, contact the man. Dylan Baker, Lauren Lee Smith, Quinn Lord, some of these people you may know now, some of them you may not. There's a ton of them here because I could go. Leslie Bibb is in it. I'm flipping through the list here of all the actors in it. There's a ton of them because this is, of course, a mix of stories. It's a mix of different horror tropes. And they all, though, do blend in together, which is one of the things I love about the film.
It's an anthology movie.
Yeah, exactly. And it's written by Michael Dougherty, directed by Michael Dougherty. You know, and I'm going to let you take over from here because for those of y'all that don't know, JT was known in college as the human IMDb. I'm going to let him take over with this.
My memory of this movie was that in 2009, I was working for the student paper, The Oracle, and the subject of horror somehow came up, which surprises me because this was during the time when I was kind of looking down on horror.
Right.
But I had a friend who was a photographer for the paper occasionally, Josh Clinton. He came in, he said, "Man, dude, a couple years ago, there was this movie. It played on the festival circuit. It was supposed to be released theatrically in 2007, and then Warner Brothers shelved it. It's coming out straight to DVD, though. It's finally coming out. Warner Brothers is going to release it through their Warner Premiere line," which that was a now defunct line where Warner Brothers released their film straight to DVD. And his enthusiasm is what got me to go like, okay, fuck it. And I went out and bought the DVD when it came out, when it was finally released for the rest of us to see, if you didn't get to see it at one of those Fright festivals. And when I watched it, it was absolutely brilliant. The thing about an anthology movie, here's the thing. It's a tricky thing to do because there is a chance you're not going to like all the stories involved.
Right.
That tends to happen. And in my opinion, only two anthology films have ever come out in which I enjoyed every single story, or, you know, at least liked them, liked to love them. The first movie is the end all be all of anthology movies, Creepshow. I love all the stories in Creepshow, even The Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill starring Stephen King.
Amazing.
You know, it's hilarious.
Made your shit.
It's darkly hilarious, but and this movie, I like every story in this movie. Every story works on some level. I will say my least favorite is the one that's actually kind of peppered throughout the other stories, and that's what ultimately ends up being the werewolf story.
Yeah,
which yes is the one with Anna Paquin, lovely ladies, but and the twist is great, and I still like that story, but I just find it to be kind of the weakest of the four stories. But my favorite, hands down, the close second is Mr. Wilkins as the principal.
Yes. Yes.
Can we carve the jack-o'-lantern, Dad? Can we?
Yeah.
Can you help with the eyes, Dad? Why is my mom not alive, Dad? Like, he's talking his son. But he's just fantastic. And that is, what's his name again? It's as the principal. Dylan Baker, right?
Yeah, Dylan Baker.
Dylan Baker. Yeah. He's fantastic. But the favorite story goes to Brian Cox, which, by the way,
yes,
some notable roles. He played Stryker in X2, X-Men United. He played, he was in The Ring. And then most notably, he's the first actor to have ever played Hannibal Lecter in Michael Mann's Manhunter in the 80s. But him as Mr. Krieg and Sam, who is one of the greatest creations in recent years, monster creations, him going after Krieg, that's the best story. And Sam was actually created in a 3-minute animated movie that Michael Dougherty made as his thesis film in college. He combined his love of writing and animation, and that's where Sam was born. And eventually someone convinced him, hey, you need to make this into a movie. He had several drafts. There have been some speculation as to why Warner Brothers shelved the movie when it was done. There's one theory, and I don't buy into it because it's a bit too much of a stretch, which is that Bryan Singer produced this movie, and a year prior to when this film was originally supposed to be released, he had released Superman Returns, which was a big fat dud for Warner Brothers and Bryan Singer and everybody involved. And so they were like, well, we don't want to promote anything with Bryan Singer. I don't believe that at all. I think the real reason was simply Warner Brothers did not know how to market the movie because it is an anthology movie. And also, kids are not safe in this fucking movie.
No, not at all.
So let me tell you, and some people have said that Warner Brothers just didn't know how to market a movie where kids are going to die. And so they shelved it. And that seems more like what would happen. And not only that, it was coming out at a time when horror films, even the remakes and reboots that had been a hit, were starting to kind of die out. And the horror genre was kind of going through another slight lull. Maybe not as one as bad as the early 90s, but it was kind of toning down. So it makes sense that Warner Brothers, the executives at Warner Brothers, would have decided, let's just release this straight to DVD a couple years after they shelved it. Right. They let it sit out there for a minute. It's just so damn good. And Michael Dougherty has talked about making a sequel, and he has talked about it as recent as the writer's strike here recently, in which he was asked about it, and he said, well, after the strikes, we're going to have to figure out budgetary stuff and the limitations of that, which tells me he's written something. And he said that not only that, but he said, like, you know, you got to give these things time because I don't want to end up making Trick or Treat Part 9, Sam Goes to Space.
Right.
That does sound like a particularly cool idea. That was his quote. And so it seems like there will be a sequel, but this is also one of those movies where I'm like, you're risking ruining perfection here, man.
Yeah, tainting the original.
Because, again, the thing about an anthology film, most other anthology films that I've watched, I may have enjoyed one or two of the stories, but most of them I didn't.
Creepshow 2.
Half of them I didn't.
You know?
I've actually, what's funny is I've never seen Creepshow 2. My example would be Cat's Eye, another Stephen King thing. There's only one story, and it's the one with James Woods, where he's quitting smoking and he joins this program where, like, if he doesn't quit smoking, they threaten to kill his fucking family.
Right.
Like, and so they take pretty extreme measures. Yeah, this movie, I could go on and on and on and on about this movie. What was your favorite story in the movie? Let me ask you that.
Honestly.
If you have one.
The principal storyline. Because it takes such a neat little twist at the very end of it. Before it moves on to the next story. And Dylan Baker was just amazing as that principal. He really was. He's so funny.
Charlie, these traditions were made to protect us.
Yeah. Yep. It is just great. That's my favorite out of them. I agree with you wholeheartedly that the werewolf thing was very... not that it's bad, it's great, but it was the weakest of the storylines in there.
And that was the thing I told Courtney when we were kind of discussing it earlier. I watched it literally an hour before we recorded, which I mentioned earlier, but Courtney, when I told him, I said, yeah, the werewolf story is the weakest. That's just the weakest in a bunch of stories I like to watch. Right. I don't want to take anything away from that part. I think part of the reason that story maybe is the weakest, though, is it's kind of peppered throughout the other three stories. We kind of cut back to Anna Paquin a few times in the other stories, then it leads to the big revelation. And I think maybe that kind of hindered it, because you take too many breaks away from it. And so when you get back to it, it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is going on too.
Another story with the kids that are collecting the jack-o'-lanterns.
Oh, that was a good
one. And going
one.
To the old haunted place down. That was very, very good.
Especially with how that fucking revenge is taken. I'll just put it that way.
Yes.
By one of the characters.
Yes. 100%.
Did you carve all of these? Yes.
Yes.
What is she, retarded? No, she's an idiot savant.
Yeah. It just... so good. So good. But yeah, those are my favorite stories out of it. How about you? I mean, I know you.
Well, what's funny is,
do you think that this movie will ever get its due? I mean, it is, of course, picking up. There are people who have seen it, but I noticed that whenever I would mention it in the last few weeks with people that I was talking to, people go, "What? What the hell is that?"
It's still in the process of being, I think, fully discovered. But it's permeated. I mean, you go walk into a Spirit Halloween store now, and you're going to see two things: Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yes.
And Trick or Treat. You're starting to see Sam everywhere. So it's getting its due. It may never grow out of, like, true cult status, but that's fine with me, man. I love being on the inside of, like,
right,
hey man, Sam, yeah, Sam, Trick or Treat, awesome. And you know, only a few people getting it, but of course, hey, the more the merrier. I hope that this film definitely picks up more fans. I'm always down for that. There was actually one, and then I pick up things when I rewatch it, because the stories are so interconnected. Like, there was a character in the film, he wheezes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice that until this viewing, really, that he's connected to an earlier story, which is the revelation. And when he crawls out of what he crawls out of, I'll just put it that way. I'm trying not to spoil too much.
Right.
He's wheezing like he will be later on. And yeah. So I'm like, oh shit, they foreshadow the hell. They're very good at foreshadowing in this movie.
Yes. And and that was one of the things is the
and
the
it plays with time too. It goes back and forth. It's not a linear story.
It's not linear and it goes back and forth. And in the end it all wraps up and it has these tendons that go out and connect it all into one moving part. You know, it just whether it just be a two characters that you saw earlier in a story walk past the characters that are this new story is about, and that you realize it's one whole night and it's one whole thing. You know, but yeah, I loved this movie so much. I'm so glad that I on a whim said, you know what, I want to watch this because yeah. I don't know. There's something about it that, you know, is calling me. And
I'm glad to be introducing this film to people because I introduced it to Courtney and it's now one of his favorite horror films. Yeah. And anytime. Like, here's how good it is. We just watched it on Halloween. Mm-hmm. Both Courtney and I did. He had to go home for something, but he watched it while he was home. I watched it here just as a Halloween kind of traditional thing. But I wanted to rewatch it tonight for tonight's show.
Right, right.
And when I told Courtney, I was like, I know you just saw it on Halloween, but you want to rewatch Trick or Treat? And he's like, yes. So, it was like, I didn't have to twist his arm to watch it.
Right, right.
And yeah, man, it's just, it is a solid, solid piece of horror. I think it shocks people when they do watch it and then you tell them the backstory of like, look, this was a straight to DVD film because Warner Brothers, for whatever reason, shelved it.
Yeah.
And now it's making them bukus of money come Halloween season. So if anything, due to the licensing agreement with Spirit and Halloween, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But
well, I think we're ready to rate this thing. How about you? You ready?
I think so. Yeah, what you get?
All right, I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 jagged lollipops used to nearly cut a person's head in two.
I give Trick or Treat 5 out of 5 razor-bladed candy bars, which will slice through your ankle.
Yes, yes.
Reminiscent of Pet Cemetery.
Yes, yes.
Goddamn. Yeah, Brian Cox, by the way, man. Yeah.
Standout performance. Dylan Jesus Baker, Christ. Standout performance.
Yeah.
Just amazing. All right. Well, I know we have a special series coming up soon. Are we going to work our way towards that, or do we want to pick a couple of movies just to do next week?
I'll be honest with you. I think we're still going to have a couple of regular episodes at the very least, because... Yeah. The series that I'm working on, I've gotten through, let me just put it this way. I've gotten through 10 of the 26 films that we're going to cover. And I'm also figuring out the format of it as well. I've discussed a particular format with you, which I think you seem to agree with. It's going to be a limited series. It's not going to be just one special. It's going to be a limited series for sure,
right?
But it's still a ways off, and I'll even go ahead and announce it. We're going to talk about the James Bond series soon. Yeah. and we're going to do a little offshoot Action Bros as the working title for right now, and we'll go from there. But yeah, for now I've got my film picked out for next week's episode of Horror Bros. We're not giving up Horror Bros. The other thing's a limited series.
Yeah.
So
limited series of Action Bros. Yes. Or Bond Bros. Or something.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm going to ask you, do you have a film for next week?
I do.
What you got? Scanners. Ooh, I've never seen Scanners.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. But
that's Cronenberg.
Cronenberg,
right?
Yeah. Body horror. But yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to stick to 1988, which is just a coincidence. I just want to watch this movie because I'm really wanting to watch the current TV series that's out. I want to talk about Child's Play.
Awesome. Awesome.
Chucky, man.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I've been wanting to talk about the movie for a minute, and there's a show, Chucky, that's
Yeah.
currently running. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna go ahead and get Child's Play out of the way. We're gonna knock out another one of the big boys of the 80s.
Yeah.
Or in
Yeah.
this case, Little Boy. So
Awesome. Awesome. Before I screwed up, almost didn't mention this. Any of y'all out there, I mean, if you're horror fans, Eli Roth's History of Horror. There's three seasons out of it. They are amazing. That
where's
he and he gets people. I'm pretty sure I was watching it. Yeah, I was watching it on Prime because I have an AMC Plus subscription through them, and that's how I got it into it. It is so good, and he has enough Hollywood clout that he gets people to come back to talk about films that you thought they would never talk about again. Craig T. Nelson comes back and talks about filming Poltergeist. you didn't move the bodies.
you moved the tombstones,
Yeah.
but you didn't move the bodies.
But it's truly great. It's three seasons. And if anything, you're going to watch it, and you're going to start getting a list going of movies that you need to see. Everything from Italian giallos to body horror masterpieces like Scanners to, all this stuff.
So to be just clear, if you have AMC Plus or AMC Plus through something else, that's
Yeah.
really the way to watch
Yes,
it. Okay.
yes. And for those of y'all out there who don't know, AMC Plus subscription also is an automatic Shudder subscription. You can watch Shudder through AMC Plus. So
Actually curious about something in that regard then.
and
Let me
oddly
see
enough,
something.
there's
Go
a lot
ahead.
of horror stuff that is exclusive to just AMC Plus. So I highly recommend doing this thing.
All right,
So,
yeah, Eli Roth's History of Horror. If
yeah.
you happen to have Shudder by itself, it's on there too.
Is it on
Just
there? Good,
I just
good.
confirmed.
Because I knew
I
there
have
was
to.
some stuff that was exclusive to AMC Plus and some stuff that was exclusive to Shudder, but pretty much you get all of it if you get
If
the
you get AMC
subscription
Plus.
AMC Plus,
Well, the reason I have to do that with Shudder though is because and I'm starting to realize I'm having to do it with Screambox as well, which, by the way, is another good horror subscription
Yes,
service.
yes.
I have to just check them directly because Shudder won't show up when, like, you're looking, if you're Googling if something's streaming, or if you're looking at a site that's supposed to show you where something is streaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shudder is sometimes excluded from that, and then we'll find out because Courtney found out that, like, oh crap, about 5 or 10 films I had on my list for this Halloween were on Shudder. I just didn't know it. And he
Yeah.
had to go look at it directly.
Right.
So that's why I checked that out because yeah, AMC Plus shows up
Yeah.
along with Prime and Netflix and
Right.
all the big boys. But
But
yeah.
yeah, check it out. History, Eli Roth's History of Horror is so good. It is so good. I thoroughly enjoyed watching all of it. Other than that, I do have a couple shows come up. Go to Jason underscore Johnson Comedy on Instagram, and I'll make any announcements for those that you local folks from around here need to know, so you can go catch a show. All right. Yeah, I think we're done here, don't you?
Yeah, I'm about to
Yeah.
get back to regular writing, so soon I'll have something to say. Oh, hey, I wrote about this or wrote about that, but
Yeah.
not right now.
Yeah.
So I'm clear. I'm
Sorry,
clean as a
folks.
whistle.
We're sorry, folks. We're
Well,
actually being kind of lazy right now because we deserve to
I
be. Anyway, until next week, remember, love each other. Bye.
Later.